Welcome to another episode of Connecting with the Toms. I'm Julie, your trauma-informed movement coach.
I'm Dr. Tom, your number one biological medicine doctor.
And we're here to offer you some hope, help, and proactive health tips without a prescription. If this is your first time listening, my dad and I like to have a conversation about how we can help you heal using proactive, helpful things to help you heal your body from the inside out. If you are someone who is in her, late 40s maybe, or 50s or 60s, this is going to be a podcast for you because we're going to be talking about perimenopause and we're going to be talking about, and if you're a male, you should be listening too, because this topic will impact you just as much. So the reason this came up is I have a friend who is in her early 50s and she's heading into perimenopause and she was trying to find some research and she's like, where's the research? And she was really struggling, was trying to figure out like what's actually happening in my body. So I thought, hey, why don't we talk about this a little bit and to help you bring a little bit more awareness on how we can prepare our bodies. Because I find a lot of times that when we are in a transition period, our bodies kind of get hijacked. And a lot of us feel that, you know, we feel disconnected from our bodies, and perimenopause may be one of those times where you do. So I wanted to bring the expert that I know to the table and offer, you know, what are some insights that we can have to help you understand this transition and bring more awareness to what's happening to your body before it actually happens. Because when you're in it, as we know, like when you deal with trauma or anything like that, when you're in it, it's very hard sometimes to navigate. So we want to prepare our bodies. And, you know, my saying, the joke is now in my mentorship groups is, this is going to go on my tombstone, but the saying that I've been using for a while now is awareness brings understanding and understanding brings choice. So today, specifically with the perimenopause topic, we would really want to start bringing awareness to it. So to help you understand what's going on in your body. So Dad, can you tell us a little bit about like, what is the perimenopause stage? What's happening in our bodies? If you want to start us, or is there somewhere we need to backtrack a little bit?
We can start anywhere because we'll end up talking about it all in general. So by definition, and it's, I'll call it a definition that's sort of been made up by the conventional community, medical wise, especially in westernized countries, because perimenopause has become associated, as your person in your mentor group asked you about, there's not research on it, because it's considered that, well, sooner or later, you basically won't have a menstrual cycle and you'll be in menopause, and then we'll just give you whatever we do for that aspect. Perimenopause is simply a time when your regular menstrual cycle and a regular menstrual cycle through, you know, typically starting, I'm going to say 12 to 14, more or less, happens for, we'll say, 40 years or so. The average used to be 53 for a woman going in. The most recent one that I found out is 49, at least in this country, in the westernized countries. Something happened in the last few years, or is happening in the last few decades, probably more appropriately. It's a time when you stop having a regular menstrual cycle. Regular menstrual cycle is simply a cycling of hormones that happens where, you know, for all intents and purposes, it follows the moon cycle. The moon cycle is 29 and a quarter days. So theoretically, a menstrual cycle is 20, should be, if we followed the moon, and historically that's what it's been, it would be 29 and a quarter days. But of course, it follows, everybody thinks a menstrual cycle is 28 days. Well, where'd that come from? It came from the fact that birth control pills didn't fit conveniently into a wheel of 29 and a quarter days. So basically, it's, 28 days. So I say 28 to 30 days is sort of within the realm of a normal menstrual cycle. And, we won't go to the obvious, but the aspect is that there comes a time, and we'll say typically if we follow the moon, on the new moon, a woman will start to bleed, and she'll bleed for, so this is sort of what lay it out as the ideal. And leading into perimenopause, this isn't what's happening. That's one of the problems of why there's problems in perimenopause. So by definition, what's supposed to happen in an ideal world, if everything is working properly, everything meaning all 11 organ systems, the primary organ systems that we have, are functioning more or less within a place of homeostasis and balance. So you lead up to period of the new moon or day one of your menstrual cycle, whatever that is. And you actually are not supposed to really experience much of anything. You're just one day supposed to, you know, whether it's during the night or during the day, you just start to bleed. And it's like, oh, well, where's the PMS stuff? Well, in definition, there's not supposed to be PMS in an ideal world. So that means your hormones are imbalanced. So if it's ideal, the typical experience is to bleed for about four days, and then it stops. And then basically over the next 10 to 11 days or so, the lining of the uterus will start to thicken under the influence of estrogen hormone, which is being produced by at least two organs, mostly by your ovary, by a woman's ovary, but also by the adrenal gland, which of course we know is a whole other issue when we talk about stress and trauma and everything else that affects the adrenal gland. So about mid-cycle, so about day 14 or day 15, and when we basically are getting, you know, to the time of a full moon, what ends up happening, you know, the ovary releases an egg, basically travels down a fallopian tube, theoretically to, that's the most fertile time, from a couple of days before to a few days after actual ovulation, when the egg can be fertilized by sperm. And if that egg is not fertilized, about day 21 or 22, we get an increase of progesterone, dramatic, which theoretically, if there is an egg, it will get it implanted into the lining of the uterus. And then if that doesn't happen, more or less about day 25 or 26, there will be a dramatic decrease in the level of progesterone. And that decrease of progesterone ultimately is what causes the lining of the uterus to slough off. And then we start a new menstrual cycle. And then that cycle repeats, you know, month after month after month after month. So we know that, unfortunately, many women do not have that nice, idealistic cycle. You know, occasionally I'll talk to a woman who does, but for the most part, sort of doesn't happen in our society. And so the first question I always ask any female patient is, tell me what your menarche was like those first, your teen years of when you were menstruating. And this is almost the most common, at least in my patient population, the most common response is, when did it start? I think it started that they'll say 12 or 13. How was it? Well, I had a lot of cramping. It was uncomfortable. Sometimes I missed a day of school because of just not feeling well, et cetera. So what happened? Well, then I wouldn't have a period for a month or two. It wasn't certainly a regular. Well, then what happened? Well, after a year or so, my mom took me to the doctor, and the doctor said, oh, you need to go on birth control pills in order to regulate your menstrual cycle. So you went on birth control pills, not for birth control. You went on birth control pills because basically you were trying to regulate your hormones. And so what you've immediately done is you've taken your body's natural cycling rhythm and you've artificially injected a hormone to try and regulate what is a normal physiologic process. So a woman will be on a birth control pill for a period of time. At some point it will be for birth control, but for the most part, you know, women have been on them for, in some cases, many, many years, you know, in general. And that's, they're using that as a, both for birth control, but they're also using that as a way to regulate. So the fact that they had birth control, first of all, they had problems, not this normal cycle I just regulated or mentioned, and then went on birth control, is the first sign that perimenopause, which is going to happen 30 years later, is not going to be particularly fun. Because we already know that there's an imbalance as far as the cycle is concerned, which had been going on there for almost the 30 years. So that aside, you know, whatever has happened in that period of time, the woman may have got pregnant or not, that by itself will have an impact on hormones. But let's move to, let's say, the mid-40s, 48, 47, 48, and now we're getting to a point where now hormones are changing. At some point, it was decided that a woman's years of procreation was no longer an important aspect of their life, of their sense of purpose, etc. So that's not why they're here. We have a different purpose, which we'll get to in a minute. So when the period, if we look, you know, whatever research there is, when we look at the perimenopause phase, what it means is your whatever your normal cycle was, whatever that is for a woman, whatever your regular menses is, suddenly starts to change, or not suddenly, just gradually starts to change. So instead of having a menstrual cycle every month, maybe it's 6 weeks, or maybe it's 8 weeks, or maybe the menstrual cycle that you had bleed really, really heavily for just 1 or 2 days, and then you spot for 4 or 5 days or 10 days, whatever. Not a lot, but just enough to be an annoyance more than anything. And then, you know, this continues. And with that often comes physical symptoms, you know, typical physical symptoms that have happened throughout, you know, we can call them PMS. Breast tenderness is pretty common. Irritability is very common. Craving of carbohydrates is pretty common. Bloating is very common for some women. It'll be a change in their bowel habits. So in other words, it's a myriad of symptoms because the hormones are affecting not just the pelvic organs, but all the organs for what's going on. And reminding that these hormones, you know, you have about 200 different tissues that have receptors for estrogen and progesterone. It's not just the ovary and the vagina area and the uterus that and the breast that, you know, have these sub-receptors. So progesterone and estrogen are actually something that are important in your whole life, not just when during menstrual years for what's going on. So we have this period of time where something has changed. So depending on what the symptom is or symptoms, the woman may not be very comfortable. She may be more tired or have more or less of these symptoms. And by definition, after a period of time where you have no menstrual cycle for 1 year, on the calendar, now you officially are considered menopausal. But in that intervening time, you've had some variety of things up and down, and whatever the symptoms are, which may have been an exacerbation of the premenstrual symptoms, if you had any, during all the years of having a menstrual cycle. So I'm going to stop there and ask you if you have any questions, since I've talked a fair bit, but we have lots more to say about it for sure.
Not really. Like, I mean, it's all good information. So it's just helping people understand that there's a transition that most women, in my experience, have irregular cycles. You know, we really don't know what the cycle is, but so perimenopause, if I'm hearing you right, perimenopause is when there's a shift in your cycle. So it might get longer, it might get heavier, it might get lighter possibly as well, I guess, or shorter. Or longer, yeah. Right? Yeah. Shorter, all that kind of stuff. So
anything.
So uh-huh. So basically, if you've been irregular though since like your 20s to 40s, you're not really going to know if you're in perimenopause then, right? Because you're so used to being irregular. I guess if you've been on birth control for health, because I know a lot of my friends who had babies and got really heavy flows after, they ended up getting the lining, mm-hmm. an ablation. And, you know, so their bodies are going through a different process. So they may not be able to know what's happening in their bodies, right? Because they're not getting a period because of the ablation. So it's going to be a little bit harder for them to know when they're transitioning, would you say?
So, yeah, it definitely is true. So I pay less attention to the calendar and more attention to how the individual is feeling. Like, right. What are you,
the symptoms?
How are you feeling? What are your symptoms on a sort of on a day-to-day basis? That's really what, you know, the bigger issue is. And because some women will be menopausal at age 42 and some women will be menopausal at 58,
right.
You know, so it's anywhere in between. So it's not the calendar that say, oh, you should be looking for this. Now, if something is different, obviously the, you know, person will go to their doctor and try and figure out, well, what's happening to me?
And right, maybe exactly.
The knee-jerk action is, oh, you're just perimenopausal, your hormones are off, and the doctor may measure your hormones and say, oh, yeah, your hormones are off. That's, and they'll either do something or not do something about that at this point in time. So the aspect of, you know, what knowing exactly when it is actually not the important aspect. The fact is that you don't feel well. That's the important part. So now we're going to back up and say, well, ideally, what should we be doing before we even get to perimenopause? And for the women who were able to do this, these are the ones that are going to find menopause is just a breeze. Because theoretically, menopause is not an illness. Menopause is a natural transition of basically losing the opportunity to, or not losing, but not being able to procreate is basically what happens, but is what menopause is. We bring in, you know, two other hormones that are now a major player, especially as we get closer into the so-called theoretical, whatever age it is, perimenopause. And that's the importance of the thyroid gland and the importance of the adrenal gland. We had said that estrogen and progesterone are predominantly produced during menstrual years and during by the ovary, you know, when it's cycling with, you know, estrogen having two peaks and progesterone having a peak, let's say day 20 or so of the cycle, if it's a normal length cycle. But there also is a regulation about what your thyroid gland is doing and what your adrenal gland is doing. So if a woman is having irregular cycles throughout her life, there's a suggestion that the other two organs, the thyroid and the adrenal gland, need to be looked at. And when a physician is looking at, so there's no sense just measuring estrogen and progesterone if you don't, so I call it one leg of the stool. You need the other two legs, which is the thyroid hormone and the adrenal hormone, to truly get a better picture. And I'm not suggesting that these are the only hormones, but these are the most predominant major players when we're talking about perimenopause and leading into menopause. So for all women, a minimal, of course, the whole idea is what can we do from a natural perspective? So the first thing that really both men and women specifically, but men could easily be doing this also, is the cycling of seeds based on seeds that are supportive of estrogen in the first half of the cycle and progesterone in the second half of the cycle. So this should theoretically start at menarche. I should become just a habit of what somebody does during their entire menstrual life. But now what we're talking about is perimenopause. So better start than
better late than never.
better late than never, because it could still be beneficial. So if a woman is not having a 28 to 30 day cycle and hasn't had that, or is in truly in the perimenopause, then we don't follow, you know, because you don't know when your cycle is. We basically just follow the moon cycle. So when it's the new moon, we basically are suggesting that a woman use flax seeds, hemp seeds, or chia seeds. The ideal is it just becomes part of your diet. You add them into stir fries, you add them on salads, you eat them on some part of your diet on a regular basis. And the equivalent, we're basically suggesting that 2 tablespoons of ground seeds. Chia don't have to, chia are pretty tiny as it is, but so you almost don't even have to grind them. But if you do, you do. So we're basically adding somewhere in the diet 2 tablespoons of ground seeds starting on the new moon. And we do that until the opportunity of the full moon. And then the full moon, we switch seeds and we go to sunflower, sesame, and pumpkin. Once again, grinding them a couple of tablespoons a day until the next new moon. Then we switch seeds again. And that just goes on and on and on and on and on and on. And if a woman is having a menstrual cycle on a pretty regular basis, and starting on day one, she's doing the flax, chia, hemp, and then mid-cycle, at point of ovulation, we'll switch them to sesame, sunflower, and pumpkin, and we'll just go on that particular cycle. And throughout one's menstrual life, that is kind of a preferred dietary change that more or less, I'll say, happens every couple of weeks would be the preferred way of ultimately doing that. And that pattern is supposed to continue, or should continue, for at least 5 years after you're theoretically in menopause, because even a menopausal woman is still cycling. She won't have a menstrual cycle because the amount of estrogen, the amount of progesterone is significantly decreased, so that she doesn't get a thickening from the estrogen of her uterus, and then a dramatic drop of progesterone the end of the 2 week cycle that causes a sloughing. However, they've done studies to show that if you put them on a graph and took things off, took the timeline off and the amounts and superimpose them, you wouldn't know if a woman was menstruating or not, because there is cycles. They're still cycling, just not enough of the hormone to be able to create a menstrual cycle. So, and that happens for about 5 years. So if a woman has not had menopausal for 5 years, then you don't need to cycle it anymore. It's just a good idea because they're essential fatty acids, they're fiber, part of a healthy diet. So there's nothing wrong with eating seeds on a regular basis that way. So that's the first thing that should be done for perimenopause, is to cycle seeds, even if you don't know what regular cycle is, but we got the moon to follow and you still got the calendar. And you just follow what the calendar says. When is the full moon? When is it new moon? So that's easy. The other thing that's starting to happen, as we'll pick 45 or 50. So, you know, at some point, the other hormones start to play a more important. And I like to think, and if you think of a triangle, and on one of the apices, you put thyroid, on one, you put the ovary, and on the other, or testes in a man, adrenal in the other. So what ends up happening as we get into perimenopause, the hormone released from the ovary is starting to decrease. Because we're not getting the typical, which means the other two organs, the thyroid gland and the adrenal gland, now we're saying, you need to pick up the pace. You still need these hormones. So it's like, where are they coming from? And a perimenopause, postmenopausal woman, now the adrenal gland starts to play more of an importance. But now let's just stop talking about that for a sec. Think about a 48-year-old woman where we're asking her adrenal gland to do more. And in the meantime, for the last 30 years, she's raised her family and had life and gone to work. And it's like all the traumas that she's dealing with and said, oh my God, you're asking my adrenal gland that's already saying, oh my God, I can't do anymore. Like how much more weight can you put on my back? So now the adrenal gland says, forget it. I'm not helping you. You're going to have to figure this out yourself. I'm not going to do that for you. You're going to do that. Now, the more we hear that, then the thyroid says, oh my God, you mean I have to do more? I'm going to have to upregulate your metabolic picture. So, oh my God, I better pick up the pace here. So we're asking these other two hormones, we're saying, this is not my job. My job is to basically help your metabolic, you know, pathways. The adrenal gland is saying, my job is to produce these 31 different hormones that basically have many, many functions. Now you're asking me to do another function that you're supposed to be doing. Why don't you do your job? I don't want to do your job. Etc. So what ends up happening, the women who are having the most challenges, 100% of the time, the thyroid and the adrenal gland are saying, I don't think we can do it. I don't think we can help you. So these are the women who are going to have a tougher time, much tougher time when they get into menopause. Then they would get into menopause. They said, now I can't sleep. Oh my God, these hot flashes are so bad. I'm up half the night or I'm up half the night and the day where, you know, I'm getting these hot flashes because these hormones are like a roller coaster. They're up and down. The body's saying, I don't know what's going on. The adrenal gland saying, I can't help you. The thyroid says, I can't help you. And the ovary says, I'm done. I was like, I did my job. Don't ask me to do the job for what's going on. So, you know, from a supportive therapy, instead, in addition to just rotating the seeds, as we just said, we're also rotating essential fatty acids. And so with the seeds, in the first half of the cycle, we typically are recommending fish oil, flax oil, if a woman prefers to be more vegetarian. And then the second half of the cycle, we recommend either evening primrose oil or blackcurrant oil. And that's just we call them very soft, but they're just like little stimuluses for estrogen and progesterone, again, to just try and make the job a little bit easier, to make a little bit more help for the woman as her hormones are ultimately changing. And so you can well imagine why now a woman is having these perimenopausal symptoms, because the hormones are on this roller coaster. The adrenal gland is saying, well, I don't know, I can help you some days, but you know, I can't help you 24/7. Thyroid says, well, how much work do I need to do per se? I can only jack up this thyroid hormone so much, because you know, I don't have the ability to do that anymore. And so all these organs are talking to each other. And in the meantime, all the 11 other organ systems, or the, we'll say without endocrine, the other 10 organ systems that we have, basically are, you know, having their own challenges, because we're now, you know, 50 years old and saying, well, what has your digestive system been doing through all this? And what is your cardiovascular system? And how much activity are you doing? And are you moving your lymphatic on a regular basis? And is your musculoskeletal getting adequate level of oxygen? Are you doing deep breathing? It becomes a jigsaw puzzle of all these different pieces and puzzles. And that's why the solution is, oh, here, take hormones. That's only one system. We have 10 other systems that are saying, well, what about me? Why aren't you supporting me? And that's why hormones seem initially dramatically effective. But in the long term, it says, I think we missed the boat here, because why is this part breaking down? Or why is that not working well? And the doctor said, well, it's nothing to do with hormones. You're right, it doesn't. It's the fact it's an aging process. So the management of supportive perimenopause and menopause is not just doing hormones, or not just looking at the ovary, the adrenal, and the thyroid, but what are all the other organs doing? Are you sleeping okay? Are you doing the rest of your basic treatment guidelines on a regular basis to be able to support all these other glands and organs that are going on? And of course, in the meantime, what is the male partner doing through all this? The male partner is observing, oh my God, my wife has turned into a witch, or it's like, geez, I can't talk to her. She's upset one day and the next day she's happy. And then it's like, and then she has this and then she has that. Like, what's going on here? So I think from a male perspective, rotating seeds in the diet is one of the things that can be supportive, because it can be a reminder for his female partner. He will be part of this journey also that's necessary. And he also has to understand that, you know, when there's a day that, you know, it's more difficult to have a conversation per se because of irritability or grumpiness, or because it didn't sleep well, or, you know, just doesn't feel well, et cetera, that's not specifically directed at you as the individual, but it's a reality of frustration, overwhelm, or however we want to think about that. So the more than ever, I think it's really important that the male in this relationship add incredible amount of support for what's going on. And one of the best ways to add support, the adrenal gland, of course, is do the opposite of our stress hormone, which is oxytocin. And the best way to do oxytocin is to hug your partner or pet your dog or take your dog for a walk, play with your dog, find, you know, something that, you know, get laughter in the picture, et cetera. So the male needs to try and put as much of that into his partner's day-to-day life as feasible, because that's sort of a counterbalancing hormone that could be particularly effective. And, you know, hugging your partner, or as I said, playing with your pets is a great way. And it's one of the reasons people have pets, because, you know, they don't complain, let's say, and they're always there. They're always friendly. They're always forgiving. And playing with your animals is a great way to raise your own personal oxytocin levels. So male and female part of this should be doing that on a regular basis. So the male part becomes supportive, and supportive from the aspect of understanding that this is a physiologic process. And they, you know, depending what's happened all the years previous, the male may say, oh, this is so frustrating. And I just had a patient yesterday who, after 38 years, ended up with a divorce. I said, how do you get married? How do you get divorced after 38 years? Well, you start to say, well, they're drifting apart because, well, I can't deal with my wife because she's this. And she says, I can't deal with him because he's not supportive. And it's like, they've drifted apart. But the reality is, more than ever, female part of, it's not just a female, they both need the support of each other. So it's a simple understanding what is happening physiologically. It's not like I'm just doing it because I'm doing it. I'm doing it because I don't feel well. I'm doing it because my hormones are imbalanced, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, it's a big part of supporting one through this particular aspect. The other component that comes into play, if there's children involved, has been children, these children are now not children. These children are now, they're married. They have their own kids. You have grandchildren. And so for some, an empty nester is another, for the woman especially, but also for the men. That becomes another piece of this puzzle, that there's an emotional component that's different. The sense of purpose for a woman, for some, as they reach perimenopause, is the reality of, oh my God, I'm never going to have kids again. I can't have kids again. Even if I wanted to have a kid, I can't have a kid because my body says you know we're not at that particular point of procreation. And for some women, what I have found is that's really an emotional challenge, because they have basically spent their entire life, you know, looking after their children, and the importance that their son or daughter, plural, are constantly seeking advice. They're there to help them. They're there to support them. They're there to do what it is that they need to do to help them have a happy and healthy life for their own children. That's another piece that comes into play at a perimenopause aspect. So, but these are all things that are just, they're normal, physiologic, they're natural laws. A woman reaches a point where she doesn't have enough hormones to create the thickened lining and is sloughing off to have a menstrual cycle. She's not ovulating anymore. And also remember that a woman's eggs are there by at birth. She already has all the eggs she's ever going to have. And so by the time you're 48 years old, you have very, very old eggs, which means that the potential of having maybe a genetic challenge is incredibly higher than a woman who's in her 20s or 30s. Now, all that being said, you know, we know that after a woman is over 35 years of age and is once a child, there's, you know, the risks of some form of a genetic challenge obviously goes up. And the reason it goes up is because they've been in her body for 35 years. And those 35 years, she's been exposed to XYZ, all the traumas that we've talked about in previous ones, plus, you know, just life in general and oxidative damage and, you know, radiation damage and having x-rays and life and et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, you start to think of the breakdown and said, man, it is truly amazing, you know, what creation has done for our human body to allow women in their 40s to have a very healthy, happy childhood in general. So, but that's sort of off the point of perimenopause. So now we get are in this. So what are we doing for the perimenopausal woman? Well, we just said we're rotating seeds, we're rotating essential fatty acids for the first half and the second half based on the moon cycle. But in addition to that, now we should be expanding our look at, well, what other organs potentially are involved in this process? It's pretty obvious that the adrenal gland becomes so. How do we support that? And one of the things about what is often conceived or perceived to be the adrenal gland, what I find is when we do testing, it's like, oh, your adrenal gland actually is held up quite well. It's doing quite fine. But the problem is it's the nervous system. The nervous system has had to take over because the sympathetic dominant aspect is taken over and there's not enough time to spend in parasympathetic. There's not enough vagus nerve activity to get us back into a balance from a parasympathetic point. So, you know, we keep talking these other systems. The nervous system becomes incredibly more important at the time of perimenopause. Because if the hormones can't do the job, the nervous system says, okay, I guess I'll pick up some of the work that the thyroid and the adrenal are, they tried, but they're doing their other stuff. So now we spend more time with the so-called or a foot on the gas pedal, where the sympathetic dominance is asked to basically provide us with what I prefer to call false energy. We're not supposed to be getting our energy from our nervous system, but it's there to provide it if we don't have it. Which basically means people spend more than 60% of the day in sympathetic dominance. And, you know, 60-40 is the ideal breakdown because they're not getting enough parasympathetic support because their sleep is off for whatever reason, their mealtimes are off for whatever reason, or they're just not able to get their body relaxed. And so they're taking XYZ medication because they can't sleep, or they have high blood pressure, or they have digestive problems, or they have headaches, or whatever the other problem is, that's also interfering with what their nervous system is doing. So, I mean, you start to realize that we don't have a 1,000-word puzzle, we have a 10,000-word puzzle that we're trying to put together as we start to look at how all these dominoes fit together and how one domino of the estrogen progesterone is just the tip of the iceberg. And we have all this stuff under the water that ultimately it is that we need to deal with for, you know, supporting and managing what's going on.
When you were talking with the seed cycling and whatnot, I actually wrote down vagus nerve, because when we talk about, you know, when you're talking about the thyroid and the adrenal, and it's funny because when you're talking, I'm like, I'm just thinking of like a Laurel and Hardy kind of skit of like, no, you take, no, who's on first? Who's on? No, you're on first. You know, this whole back and forth and back and forth. And that's what many of us are experiencing in our bodies, but we really don't understand what's going on because we don't really knows really a lot about their thyroid. Like, you don't learn about your thyroid in school. Like, you just, unless you specifically are going to become a doctor. So vagus nerve was a big piece of the puzzle that I was like, yes, this is where we need to dive in to be able to support. And then obviously the nervous system, that's, I mean, I think that's a big transition for me and why I do what I do now, because I see it so much with people. And I've been talking to all of my clients and in my groups, and we've been talking about like, okay, in 24 hours, how many hours do you spend in a sympathetic state? And people are really not in that 60%. You know, they're more like 80, you know, like they're much higher, 80, 90%. Like, it's really hard for people. They're like, where do I find time to go into parasympathetic, right? And I'm like, well, are your meals in parasympathetic? And then I ask, how long are your meals? How long do you actually sit down to eat? And most people are like, 10 minutes, 10 minutes. All right. So that isn't really going to help you get in a parasympathetic state, right? And so knowing and understanding that, you know, like, even if you just start there and having that awareness of how much of my day do I actually spend in a stressed sympathetic versus parasympathetic state is a really, really helpful thing. And the vagus nerve, I think this has been a big key foundation for healing in my world and my life personally and with my clients. Like, I spend, you know, if a new client comes on, vagus nerve is the first thing that I assess. And just something to throw out there is I had a post on Instagram go viral. It's at, this morning I found out it's like at 1 million views today, and I'm like, wow, okay. And all I was showing is people how to assess if their vagus nerve is stressed. Or so basically you know, take your sternum, if you're listening, you can try, you take your fingers and then press up against your sternum and push a little bit to the left and push a little bit to the right. If that's tender, that's a sign that you're in a sympathetic stress state because your vagus nerve innervates on both sides there. And then what I did is I actually showed them sound healing. So I had them do the Taoist, the six sounds of healing, the Taoist, and some people that tenderness went away and some people it got heightened. But helping people understand that there are simple things like sound and sensations is an extremely powerful way to help support your thyroid and your adrenals, right? So that's the work that I'm really putting out in the world. And, you know, like if you're like, I don't know what vagus nerve exercise to do, or I don't know what my purpose is in life, then head over onto my page and this is what I help you with. So if you feel stuck or if you feel, you know, you're that woman or man and you're like, I don't know how to support my wife, like going through this transition, like that's, you know, sometimes we need that support, right? And that's where co-regulation comes in. So yeah, so there are lots of vagus nerve exercises. And I just want to say, like, I think that's a big piece of the puzzle because people are like, what can I do? It's like seat cycling. If I'm like looking at it and I'm like, oh my God, that's overwhelming, right? A lot of people are like, that's a lot of work. And how am I going to do that? And the thing is, I'm just going to say there are companies that actually prepackage it for you and they send it to you and it's like on auto ship. So if you're that person, you're like, I'm not going to prepare myself and get all that stuff ready. There are, like I said, prepackaged things that you can do to just add to your food. And it just becomes a regular part of your life. You know, if you really care about your thyroid, your adrenals and your ovaries and want to care, like head into that part of your life and you're, you know, near 50s or whatnot. If you want to head into that without, I guess, struggling with your hot flashes, it's funny. Cause I'm like, when you're talking about hot flashes, I just have to show the story is that I was at Walmart and in front of me were two older ladies and the cashier was complaining. She's like, oh my God, my hot flashes. It's so, I'm like, oh my God. She's like trying to like strip off her clothes. And then she's telling us a story about her going to her ex-husband's house. And she was like, I was basically naked. He's like, why are you walking around naked? You're always like, what are you doing? You're trying to like lure me in. It's so funny. She's so animated and like telling like the three of us that are just standing in there just waiting to pay for our stuff. And she's like, I don't know how I can do this. And then so the two ladies in front of her, she's like, and they're like, they're offering her sympathy and all that type of stuff, right? They're like, yeah, I've been there, done that kind of thing. And then she looked at me and she's like, you have no idea what I'm talking about, do you? And I'm like, I'm like, how old do you think I am? So I got the best compliment. She thought I was in like my early 30s. I was like, wow, thank you. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, and it turns out she was only 2 years older than me. So it was just funny how like her body, she's really struggling. And I'm like, okay, you're not alone, my friend. Like there's a lot of women that I hear stories like this, but it's like, you know, like hopefully this podcast, if you're listening to this, is know that there are things that you can do to support yourself. And that's really what we're about. That's what this podcast is really about, is like, yeah, there are, you know, the basic treatment guidelines and all the type of stuff, but there is support out there and there are things that you can do for yourself that you don't have to rely on hormones, because that's what I hear a lot of too, right? At the end of the day, a lot of women take the hormones and then they still feel like crap. You know, they're like, they're still, or they want to get off the hormones and then they're in that transition because they realize like, no, this isn't the solution I'm looking for. And, you know, what do I do from there? So.
Well, it's the, yeah, that's great. The, just to take that aspect and, you know, we're not saying that hormones are not an important part of a transition for some women. you know, some women, they haven't had the opportunity or the knowledge, and they're just sort of getting, this is new to them, as this whole concept of a sort of a biological medicine approach to health, and looking at it from other than taking it out of a prescription bottle, but looking at things that you can do for yourself and how you can support yourself. You know, you may be a little behind the eight ball. So you can't just say, well, I'm going to wait until I get all these things in place and everything will be fine. So there is a time and a place that hormones are helpful, because they will buy us some time as you start to integrate some of these things. And you're right. I think the people who come to talk to us are interested in, well, I've been on these for a while. Is there something else I can do? Or how can I not have to take these on an ongoing basis? Because, you know, it's physiologically not normal to be taking hormones, you know, for years and years and years after you've never had a menstrual cycle. That, I mean, that's not a normal physiologic response and reaction. Something that Dr. Guinot taught me so many years ago, as far as an observation is concerned, and I have had observed it in patients, but I had no explanation for it. As he had in his teachings and in his writings, he said there is a second component that happens for women postmenopausally. The hormones no longer play a role as far as procreation, but as what he found and what I personally found in my patients is that the second function of these decreasing hormones, but still hormones, estrogen and progesterone, is spiritual, I'll call it spiritual awakening or spiritual enlightenment. And it's not that you have to be menopausal in order to have it, but I certainly personally observe that women who are menopausal have a quite a different aspect. Once again, these are all my own patient population. Have a different component of thinking about spirituality. And it's not that they haven't done something all along, once again, but there's almost an awareness that something is different, something has changed. And Dr. Guinot always spoke quite eloquently about the aspect of that. And one of the things he said is women who will continue to take birth control pills, in his observation, had a blunting of this heightened awareness that came with spiritual enlightenment. And it's not that a woman can't, it's just he called it blunted. And that has definitely been my own personal observation in my practice with literally tens of thousands of women that I've seen in the last 50 years being in medicine at this point in time. So there's the aspect of that are taking hormones. And first of all, there's no such thing as natural hormone. You don't get, even though, you know, they can be made from yams or soy, haven't yet found a soybean that you can find a hormone in it, or a wild yam where you can find a hormone in it. So in other words, that's the basis for which the hormone is made. And they're calling them natural hormones. It's called instead of coming out of horse urine, where the typical hormones are coming from, progestins and estrogens, which is where typically they've been done for years. So now we call them bioidentical hormones. They look like our own hormones, but once again, they're not coming from the only place they're coming from is a yam or a soybean, whatever else they may have figured out to this point, because bioidentical hormones. So, you know, in one's mind, it's like, oh, this is a natural hormone. The only natural hormones are in your body. Your body makes them. So, and if you're taking something that's, you know, in a pill or a cream or a suppository or however you're applying it, know that that's literally an artificial product. It's providing you with the relief. And so I think, once again, the people who come to talk to us are saying, is there another way of doing this? And no, it's not. You'd be doing this, you don't just suddenly stop it and say, okay, now I have all these problems. And that by itself is telling you that your body hasn't been able to keep up with what it is. And if you supply a hormone artificially, sooner or later, your body goes, oh, I guess I don't have to do anything. I guess why make this? And so, you know, sometimes it is necessary, but certainly with estrogen and progesterone, it's commonly said 5 years after menopause, it's like, yeah, you shouldn't be taking these because what is the longer term effect? And unfortunately with women, you know, 1 in 8 women, I believe it's 1 in 8, will experience breast cancer. And as soon as you have breast cancer or any type of a hormone cancer, if you're on hormones, the first thing they do is you have to stop the hormones. It's like, oh my God, your body says now you're into shock. So now you're shocked from your diagnosis, but now you're in shock because you don't have these hormones that you think have been really your life saving type thing. So, you know, our goal is to support people on all levels, no matter what the challenge is. And, you know, if they have symptoms associated with perimenopause or menopause, we support all their organ systems. Hormones are sometimes a piece of that to buy us some time while we are putting all the other pieces of the puzzle in place to support the 11 organ systems that are necessary to truly try and create a homeostasis, not only within the endocrine system, but all the other corollary systems that are also tie into it, because there isn't one organ system that works independent of any other, which is why the challenge of going to a specialist for one problem without talking about all the other ones becomes a challenge, which is why, of course, the bias is you need to see somebody who practices biological medicine, where we're looking at ideally all 11 systems at the same time to do everything we can to support them in general. So that's the, so we're, as you said, you go back to basic treatment guidelines, you go back to seed cycling, you go back to EFAs. But in addition to that, there are also homeopathics, there's herbal remedies, there's nutraceuticals, vitamins and minerals that are generally supportive of that while we're doing everything else to rebalance our hormones and our 10 other organ systems.
Finding your purpose in life is important. So it's like, if you had to prioritize what you just said, like, let's say I'm like getting ready, like say I'm in my mid 30s or I'm in my mid 40s or I'm even my mid 50s, what would you prioritize to help prepare me for the next 10, 20, 30 years with regards to my hormones and menopause and whatnot? Would you start with seed cycling? Like, that's where I should start?
If you haven't had a cycle for over 5 years, you don't need to cycle.
If you're in it, you cycle. Okay.
If you're perimenopause, you cycle. Correct. Okay. And you add the essential fatty acids. Correct.
Okay. So the first thing I need to do is start seed cycling. That's a number one. And then number two, I should start doing vagus nerve exercises or figure out my purpose in life?
No, I think we need it. I think those are important, but I think we need to look at the straight physical aspect of how do we support your hormones? Because the other hormone you have to support is your adrenal gland, because that one's been working, dealing with your stress for X number of years.
So seed cycling number two is nervous system. Get you in a parasympathetic?
No. Number two is adrenal. Number three is nervous system parasympathetic activity, which is vagus nerve. And then your purpose. And then purpose, and you deal with trauma and all the other stuff that we've talked about on many of these previous ones. That's correct.
Okay, so then adrenal support, then what's the best way to support the adrenals?
The number one treatment of the adrenal gland is routine.
Right.
The body.
You're going to say that. I'm like, routine. Yes.
It is. That's what it is. It's like go to bed at the same time, get up at the same time, eat your meals at the same time, do your exercise more or less. This is what we do for babies. You know, they take a bath at the same time, they go to bed at the same time, you're breastfeeding them at the same time, they wake up, et cetera, et cetera. So why? Because what you're doing is you're setting the adrenal gland for what it's meant to do, which is basically because there is a circadian rhythm associated with the hormones that are coming out of the adrenal gland. The number one treatment, the number one way to balance the adrenal gland is get a routine. It's not helter skelter. It's like, it's all over the place. And bedtime, meal times, routine times is the number one treatment before you say, oh, I should take an adrenal support, or I should take extra vitamin C or extra vitamin B, which are great. However, if you're not doing the routine, those are the tip of the iceberg. We want to deal with the stuff that's under the water, which is routine. So it has to be a part of perimenopause treatment.
And that's the thing, is people are like, when they look at me, they're like, ugh. So I'm sure somebody listening to this was like, because I feel you. it's hard, because you know, we do live a life that is keeping us in a sympathetic, you know, fight or flight state, and you know, things are coming at us. So here's an example. If some of you have known, I may have talked about this before, so my dad talks about oxytocin and talks about, you know, animals are fantastic. I invested in animals for my daughter to help her with her nervous system, help her with her anxiety, help her with her mental health. the breeder missexed them. So I had I thought I had two girls. I got a boy and a girl. This week, the girl had babies. Talk about throwing off the routine. Talk about throwing a wrench in the schedule and a schedule. And the thing is, for me, it's really about, you know, the things that I'm doing to help regulate my nervous system are helping me keep on routine so that when there is a surprise or a shock or something comes up in your life, you're able to, you know, kind of roll with it and not be like, oh my God, this is going to take the wind out of my sails. Yes. So I understand if you are someone that does struggle with routine and finding a schedule, but it is important to, you know, that is the foundation. Like my dad is saying, like, do the best that you can. Like if you start with just start going to bed at the same time. And I mean, I can hear every excuse like, well, I'm not tired or whatever. So this is why we, you know, practice the basic treatment guidelines, you know, do lymphatic work, do breath work, you know, do the sound healing was a big one that, you know, went viral for me. So, you know, go on Instagram and you'll check it out. I have it on YouTube as well. There are different things that you can do to start shifting your nervous system. But it is, you know, start showing up for yourself and putting yourself as a priority, I think is a big piece of the puzzle with perimenopause too, because a lot of times for the last 40, 50 years, we've been putting other people first. And so maybe this is a time for you to start shifting and looking at, you know, like put your own oxygen mask on and what can you do to nurture your own self at this point in your life? Maybe this is the time.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing all that, Dad. I think it was very helpful. And if for our next podcast, we're going to be talking about fasting. So the other topic that's been coming up for me in my mentorship group is fasting and the ins and outs. Like we are heading into a new season. So I know, Dad, you have some thoughts about fasting and how to do it and who should be doing it. Should someone in perimenopause be fasting? Would that help their adrenals?
I can't answer that in just a couple of sentences, but we'll do a whole podcast fasting is something, I mean, first of all, the definition of what it is not what most people think it is. And so I'll leave it at that and listen to our next podcast and we'll talk more. We'll delve into it in detail.
Perfect. So thank you so much for being here. We appreciate your support. We appreciate you listening. If you have any topic ideas that you'd like for us to discuss, please send them in. Our contact information is in the show notes. So thank you so much for your support and we will talk to you next time.
Talk to you then.
We want to remind you that knowledge isn't power. Applied knowledge is power, where knowledge turns to experience. We encourage you to implement the information shared, allowing you to shift your health and energy. And if this is your first time listening, we truly appreciate you being here and would love to have your support by subscribing to our channel. We also love hearing from you, so please connect with us and share your thoughts. And if you have any ideas for future podcasts, please let us know. If you're interested in learning more about biological medicine or trauma-informed movement, check out the show notes. Thanks again for listening, and we look forward to connecting with you in the future.